Welcome to Combo Smite, the War Machine and Hordes Battle Report podcast brought to you by an Imperial Lackey, an overpowered Swan, and an angry Elf. Welcome to Combo Smite. This week's podcast is brought to you by the Kador Bearded Warcaster Association. Vlad and Harkovich would like to remind all the sons of Kador that a beard is a manly and powerful way to show your allegiance to the Empire. Also, they would like to thank the old witch for applying again, but she is still not being considered at this time. My name is Mark, and I play Signar and Menoth, and in both of my factions combined, I only have one warcaster with a beard, and he now plays for Krix.
My name is Nick, I play Retribution and Dwarves.
I'm Aaron, and I play Kador, and I resent the fact that the Kadoran Council is denying the old witch the right to bear a beard. I think they're just denying her because her beard is actually way more majestic than any of the men's. So.
Probably fair.
Also, it's pubic beard, but beard nonetheless.
Oh, God. For anyone who hasn't had a chance to look at Aaron's old witch paint job, you're missing something. It's impressive. Jaw-droppingly impressive. And he didn't actually paint a beard on her, but now I think he probably should.
For a second, I thought you said old witch hand job, and I'd be like, that's just not good.
I would bleed to death if that happened.
You can be quiet, Mr. Dominating your fags. Anyways.
Everyone needs a little domination now and then.
So this week we had a game between Nick's Retribution and my Signar, also preparing for this weekend's tournament. But before we get into that, news and announcements. I wanted to mention briefly that the Scorn Warcaster, that would be Xerxes on a rhinoceros, looks really freaking cool. And since I already hate Xerxes, I'm sure this won't make me love him anymore. But he's just a really strong matchup against Signar. And I think the Journeyman Warlocks are a neat concept. The one for Circle looks really cool. I don't know if they'll be any good, but they're pretty models.
Yeah, no, lots of cool announcements made for Hordes at the keynotes at TempleCon. That was kind of cool. Definitely, you know, I'm sure everyone's going to be psyched to get their own version of the Journeyman that War Machine got last year. Or yep. I guess it's still not quite gotten yet, but or announced anyway. And yeah, like Epic Xerxes looks completely ridiculous on a Rhino.
Yes, almost enough
to make you want to pick up Scorn.
Well.
Not quite. I still don't like any other models.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's personal preference. Yeah, no, but lots of cool stuff. The War Beast packs sound really cool. Like War Beast units that generate Fury and Frenzy. Very neat concept. Can't wait to find out the full rules for them.
I can't wait to get light Warjack packs. I think that'll be cool.
Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah. So, because, you know, the standard rules, if anyone else gets a cool toy, Signar's got to get a better one. You know, just the way it's got to go. What about you, Aaron?
I have zero news.
Really?
Zero.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're one step away from putting your Kador on consignment?
No, not that bad. I do have to say, though, and just taking a page out of Mark's book by saying that, Wednesday is almost the only day of the entire week that I actually think about War Machine.
Wow.
That's the only day we play. So I am poorly equipped to talk at any length about anything in War Machine.
Fair enough.
Aaron, do you know what day it is?
Saturday?
It's not Wednesday, and we're talking about War Machine. Yeah. So unless you're on autopilot, you're thinking about War Machine.
I said thinking.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
My point being, though, is that you guys, I don't want to say live and breathe War Machine.
Pretty freaking close.
You definitely are in the trenches, so to speak.
Yeah.
Digging up all the juicy tidbits of information. Whereas I'm just like, what's a TempleCon? Yeah. Don't look my way if you need any information like that.
Yeah.
So no information.
Fair enough. News. Now, I'm really hoping that the podcast, that this particular episode, and listening at how fabulous our battle was, will inspire Aaron to compete in the tournament we're going to on Saturday. Because quite frankly, Nick and I are both going to get noob stomped. And it'll be much more fun if there's a third of us to be noob stomped along with us. So we can all, you know, cry into our beers afterwards and as a unit.
If you drank.
But if I drank. But I drank a little bit. a little bit. I'm a lightweight. Two beers, I'm under the table.
Which I think is a good thing. People always complain about that, but I'm like, you're spending less money.
Exactly.
It's only a good thing. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
When we played those games the other day, and I just lost three times in a row, and it was also embarrassing because Nick was like, "We'll just play the first three rounds," and then you beat me in the first three rounds, first three turns.
Honestly, I'm not going to the tournament by any illusion to be competitive. I don't think I'm going to win. I don't think I'm going to place. I think I'm going to be eliminated first round, and probably by Nick, let's be honest. But I think it'll be fun to play with people who I've never played before and, you know, to get feedback on people who are completely new to my particular style of shenanigan and will be like, no, that just isn't going to work or whatever. I think that'll be really cool. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to get my face stomped, but it'll be face stomped by strangers, and that's worth something, dude.
Yeah, I guess. But is it worse than getting your face stomped by friends?
No, not even a little bit. It's much better. Honestly, every time I've been to the game chamber, not only the people there are really friendly and nice, even if they're stomping my face in, and they have, you know, you get this just an incredible wealth of information. It's such a positive experience most of the time. I mean, I won't say all the time. I'm sure there are some tools that you're going to run into, but it hasn't happened yet. Okay, so with that, let's move on to the battle report. So as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Nick and I are still practicing for the tournament. Aaron's practicing for the tournament as well, but he wasn't playing a tournament game this round. So it's a three-list format, and you give your three lists to your opponent. Your opponent gets to veto one of them, and then you pick your list based on the two that he doesn't veto. Pretty straightforward, interesting concept. Most importantly, it is not character limited, which is just freaking cool, because that means I can take Ryan Holt in each of my lists, and I did. So Nick, why don't we start by talking a little bit about the list you picked and why you did so?
The three lists I was working on are a Ron list, an E-Virus list, and an Aussian list, and I'm pretty comfortable with the Aussian list because it's not very different than my list at 50 points. It just has less stuff in it. Mm-hmm. So I know what to do with it. I know how its gears turn and such. The E-Virus list, it's also very similar to the list at 50. It just has fewer Griffins. I'm pretty familiar with how that list works. It's just a matter of tuning it to get better at 7-minute turns. And I've practiced it about three times now at 7-minute turns, and I'm okay with it. Like, I'm still going to need more practice to actually win ever, but this weekend isn't about winning. It's about having fun.
Exactly.
The only list I hadn't played once yet was Ron. So I wanted to get him on the table and give him a shot because I hadn't practiced at all. And you really, like, it's amazing how much improvement you get from just running the same list three times in a row. You get so much better at what it does and the mechanics of it. So I wanted to play the Ron list at least once.
Cool. So what was in your Ron list?
Yes, of course. In the Ron list, I had Ron, a Phoenix, Max Sentinels with UA, Iris 2, the Fane Knight, an Arcanist, two Battle Mage Magisters, solos, Stormfall Archers, and I think that's it.
Yep. If now that you've played it twice, is there anything you would change?
I'm not sure. The Fane Knight, now, I mean, I was playing the Fane Knight very aggressively in both the games we played, and he didn't do a lot. Minor spoiler. Now, it could be that I'm playing him wrong, but it could be that it's just not very good at 35 points because there's not enough other stuff to kill instead of him. I don't know. I would consider dropping him and taking like a second unit of Stormfalls or possibly a Battle Mage unit.
Interesting. All right. Well, Nick has practiced both of his lists multiple times. This was his first time using Ron. For my part, I'm taking three lists, which are Nemo 3, Karis Sloan, and Siege Brisbane. And I've only practiced my Nemo list. I've practiced it four times. It ticks like clockwork at this point. But I didn't want to go to the tournament without putting either Sloan or Siege on the table at least once just to figure out how it worked. And so I decided to go with my Sloan list. And the list is Karis Sloan with a Stormwall and a Squire. The Gun Mages with the UA. Grenadier. And two Trencher Master Gunners. And the Grenadier is being marshaled by the Gun Mages. And then, of course, it has Reinhold. And that's it. So when you look at the pictures, it's really not a lot of models, especially when you compare it to the hordes of Nyx models. But the trade-off is that it's got a lot of shots, and the Grenadier with the two Trencher Master Gunners is actually a really interesting package. Now, the trade-off for all of that is that it really needs or would benefit from something that would screen either the Stormwall or the Gun Mages. It doesn't have any chaff, no tar pit unit, and it's relying on a lot of accurate ranged firepower. So against some things, this list will struggle. But overall, I'm not too displeased with how it worked. Aaron, are you familiar with the scenario we played?
It is two zones that are 6x12 that are approximately in the center, 8 inches apart, and each zone has an objective in it that counts as an enemy model. So to control or dominate the zone, that objective has to be destroyed.
Yeah, that's basically it. I think it's actually unchanged from 2013, but I'm not sure.
Wasn't it four before? There were four objectives instead of two?
Destruction used to have four. Oh, no, maybe.
No, process elimination was just two.
Yeah, okay.
It's possible that the wording on the objective changed a little bit, but yeah. I don't know.
Well, they did add specifically that they can't be targeted. They can't be the target of prey.
Yeah.
So I think that wording changed.
Yeah.
I also didn't realize that they're immune to continuous effects. I screwed that up a couple times in previous years. Okay, so we rolled for initiative, and
It's killbox also, which is important.
Of course, how could I forget the killbox? So we rolled for initiative, and because Morrow hates me, Nick won, and he chose to go first. Nick, was there a particular reason you chose to go first instead of taking tableside?
Signar.
Yeah, that's about it. And I picked the tableside I did because there's actually a bit of concealment in one of the zones, and I figured I could plant my my caster behind the concealment, dominate the zone, and keep her a little bit safe from ranged attacks. Although, considering everything in Nick's army has reach, wasn't a big benefit. Okay, Nick, why don't you talk about your deployment?
So I'm going to just kind of spread out along the table. There's a big opening in the center, so the Sentinels went there. And the Phoenix was nearby them with the Arcanist pet. And I had Stormfalls behind the cover on the right-hand side. And Ron was over near them so that he can move up out of the kill box and still get cover. And I had a Magister on each flank, and I had the Pain Knight on my left flank with Iris.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have a Mage Hunter Assassin in this list, did you?
Oh, I did, yeah. She was up on the far, I think on this list, it was the right flank, yeah.
Yeah. She's actually out of frame in your deployment picture.
Yeah, I forgot about her.
Yeah. For my part, the Stormwall went dead smack in the center. No surprises there. The Arcane Tempest Gun Mages went immediately to its left with Arlen, and Sloan, Reinholdt, and the Squire went to its right. And then after Nick put it as advanced deploy, the Grenadier went at the very edge of the advanced deploy with the two Trencher Master Gunners directly behind him, all dug in, which is a nice way for them to start. Immunity to blast damage and cover is pretty good. I'm not going to lie to you. I did make a mistake with the deployment, though. I should have put the Trench Master Gunners in front of the Grenadier, but, you know, now I know. Won't make the mistake again.
Retribution, turn one. So, not much goes on. Basically, I just run up board. Ron gets his buffs out, so I put Polarity Field on the Sentinels, and I keep Force Field on Ron, because I know you have that one AoE in this list. So Sentinels just run up the middle. Phoenix runs up behind them. Pain Knight runs around the left side of the board, left side of the house. Stormfalls run up to the wall. Ron advances up to the wall so you can get out of the kill box next turn. And that's about it.
For all those people listening at home, Nick is scissoring all sorts of things.
I was just going to say, that's really loud.
Yeah.
Are you giving Heather a haircut?
So I do apologize for that sound effect. I'm sure Nick is going to be more sensitive to our listeners in the future and not scissor while he's doing the battle report. But for now, every time I say scissor, I always think of that episode of South Park.
Yeah, no, I don't know why that's not why the direction we went with that joke right off the bat.
I couldn't figure a way to tie it in. Scissors me Xerxes. Anyways.
Scissor me Tambars.
Anyways. Okay, so Signar turn one. Everything moved up way too fast. Those elves, even when they're slow, are really freaking fast. So, trying to buy time, basically the Trencher Master Gunners both move up just to toe into the zone. The Grenadier moves in just to be behind it. In this arrangement, the Grenadier gets to fire three shots without having to spend a focus, which is awesome. And the Trencher Master Gunners can give it Artillerist, so it gives it plus two to hit, and I get to reroll distance and scatter direction. So I fire the first shot at the Mage Hunter Assassin. It scatters just enough to tag her on the base just by a tiny amount, and I obliterate her, boost damage, she's gone. And the next two shots go towards Stormfall Archers, but because of Force Field, which is an incredibly powerful, annoying spell, if you happen to have AoEs, they all scatter away harmlessly and do no damage. Then the Stormwall moves up, throws out a Lightning Pod, Sloane moves up to be behind cover, she casts Refuge on herself, and my Arcane Tempest Gun Mages all move out, spread out as much as they can to avoid the withering fire of the Stormfalls. For the record, anyone out there who plays Signar, ATGM generally do not do well against Stormfalls unless they can shoot first. So I didn't want him killing my entire unit before I had a chance to kill anything. And Arlen just moves up a little bit, and that's it.
Okay, so my next turn. You guys are still pretty far away. So I just basically run most of my stuff forward again. So my Sentinels run forward. They get a charge order, and they charge the Lightning Pod. And so they kill that, and the rest just kind of run. So they run up a bunch around the hill, but they're just kind of scattering around to try to take advantage of Vengeance next turn, is the idea. Now, a couple of my Stormfalls move up, and they fire. One fires a brutal shot in Grenadier, does a couple points of damage, but then I was thinking to kill your Grenadiers as well with the blast, but of course they're dug in, so no blast for me. But so instead, the next guy fires a fire shot and lights them all on fire, which is good.
Yeah.
Iris moves up and tries to take a shot at Kara, but she's out of range. The Pain Knight, just in kind of an aggressive extreme flanking maneuver, I figure I can just kind of get up in your face and just kind of give you a bad day if I just run him up. So I ran him as far as he could go, right up into Kara's face. So he was he got to within about 3 inches of her. So if I had the foresight to actually TK him first, he actually could have engaged her.
Yep.
But I wasn't thinking about it at the time, so I just kind of ran him up there to just kind of do something with him. Which was probably a bad move. and Ron just kind of moved up, and I don't think he did anything with his focus. I think he just stopped. Oh, no, I ran out of time right as soon as he was moving. So
yeah. You activated him, you ran out of time, and you're like, and he moves out of kill box. So, timing was perfect.
I think that was all I really did this turn.
Yeah. So Nick's army is all within range of my guns. I'm playing Sloane. That means feet. So Reinhold gives Sloane a second shot. Sloane activates. She pops her feet. And because the Pain Knight, Fane Knight, now you've got me doing it, you bastard.
He causes pain.
Because the Fane Knight is point-blank range to my Warcaster, and he's big and powerful and scary, Sloane just shoots him, hits him, dismounts him. The Stormwall gets taken out of activation shot. It shoots your Sentinel Officer. I'm hoping I can kill him quick so I don't have to worry about Vengeance. But I flub the damage roll, so the officer survives, which sucks. Sloane shoots the dismounted Fane Knight, kills him, and then I briefly consider using her refuge move to get away from your approaching wall of sentinels, but I realize that the only place I can move is towards my storm wall, which leaves her way out in the open, and it's a bad idea, so I just leave her put. The storm wall activates, launches a pod, kills a couple sentinels with the lightning, and then fires the big gun again at the officer, kills him this time. Sloane gets her feet shot, which she fires at the sentinel, does a bit of damage. Stormwall activates again, shoots the phoenix, drops a shield, and does some damage to the phoenix itself. And then the Trencher Master Gunners and the Grenadiers all activate. I try to spray, but I'm engaged. But the Grenadier then, you know, lobs out its shots under the effect of Artillerist, and kills two sentinels, maybe three, I don't remember, a couple. And then lastly, the Arcane Tempest Gun Mages activate, and while I'm activating them, I run out of time, but they move up, they take snipe shots, and I just get atrocious rolls, except for one. The one that I move as close as I can to Iris, fires a snipe shot at her, hits her, and manages to drop her, which is just perfect. So, despite the fact that I didn't kill nearly as many things as I really should have and wanted to, It's still not a bad round overall. Oh, I forgot to mention, but the fire on both of my Trencher Master Gunners goes out. And the fire on my Grenadier does not go out, but fails to wound. So that was perfect. So overall, not a bad turn.
Did you mention how you moved your first gunner and then engaged him?
Yeah, that was... Well, I moved him up, and I thought he was outside of the 2 inches to get that spray template down. But it turns out I'm not very good at judging 2 inches, so he was in by like 3 or 4 millimeters.
Oh yeah, he was well in. I could tell as soon as you moved him.
Yeah.
But I'm slightly better at that than you are.
Yeah, and by slightly you mean very.
Well, only because you're so bad, not because I'm that good.
Thanks. Anyways. Okay, so for your third turn, Nick, what were you going to try to accomplish?
I don't really know what to do. I mean, I was rapidly running out of Sentinels, so I didn't really know if I had any hope of taking down your Hyperion, but I was going
especially
to try.
Especially because it's a storm.
But I was going to try.
Yeah.
So I activate Ron first and I feet, I think.
Yep.
I activate him first and I feet, and he moves up over the wall because I had 3 focus, and I was like, hey, I can kill something with this focus. So I threw out a chain blast onto Arlen, and the second deviation, I think, killed the gun mage, but honestly, like, it wasn't really worth going up there to do that, so it was kind of a stupid thing to do. But anyway, I did that. So I threw out a chain blast, killed Arlen and a gun mage, defeated, and then my battle mages moved up, and one of them shot the Stormwall, another one shot a gunner or something.
Yep.
And then my sentinels charged in and onto the Stormwall, and they did a respectable amount of damage. I think I had to TK a couple of my sentinels to get them in to charge range to charge lanes around the recovering fire. They charged in. They did a pretty decent amount of damage. I only had 5 left, mm-hmm. and I think I cripple one side completely. I think I did.
Absolutely. Yeah, you did like 40 points of damage with those 5 guys.
I crippled one side completely, and you had only 1 cortex box left, which was very sad for me. I did a couple more points from the Magister. The Phoenix shot and boosted that, and did a couple more points with his gun. I think I lit him on fire, if that matters. And that was about it. Oh, Stormfall's also a brutal shot at him and did a bunch more damage too. And so he was quite close to being dead.
Yeah. So Nick's quite close comment. My Stormwall was down to 7 boxes. He still had 1 arm and his cortex, but that was basically it. No lightning pods, no nothing like that. So I'm thinking that the attrition game is going to go very heavily against me. But correspondingly, Nick has obligingly moved Ron right out into the open, in the middle of nowhere, unprotected, in front of all of his troops.
And no focus on him.
And no focus on him, which is just perfect. So if only I had a good ranged assassination warcaster. Oh, wait! I have Sloane. So I give 2 focus to the Stormwall. She camps the last 4. She moves over easily within range, takes her shot, and hits the first time, inflicts a redonkulous amount of damage, like 11 points. Second shot misses, of course. So then the Stormwall activates. He fires his functional big gun at Ron. Misses, of course. So he's down to, like, I don't know, 5 health. My Grenadier activates, tags him with his first shot, inflicts another 3 points of damage. And then, unfortunately, second shot misses and scatters, and because he's got force field up, the blast damage, he's immune. So he's down to, like, 2 hit points. I'm almost out of guns, and I decide to activate my Arcane Tempest Gun Mages. I'm down to, like, my last minute. I move them all up, and now I have to decide whether to, like, fire individually at dice minus 6 and try to get the damage, or fire a big CRA, and I decide
to... Keep in mind, at this point, he has 3 damage left.
Yeah. So I decide to go for a CRA, and because I'm panicked and stupid, I have 1 guy who's out of range and a 2nd guy who doesn't have line of sight, but the other 4 all do, and so I get the 1 big CRA off. I think they need a 5 to hit, and they hit, and then pow 14, so I need a 4 to kill, and I get it authoritatively, and Ron drops, and I win, and it's wonderful. So yeah, that was the game. Not a long one, but still nerve-wracking and a lot of swings, actually. If Nick hadn't been so obliging to move Ron out into the front of everywhere, I think I would have had a pretty tough time trying to win this one. But hard to say, obviously.
Yeah, you know, it could have gone either way. I mean, because on my turn, on your turn, if I hadn't just, you know, handed my caster on a silver platter like that, I don't think you would have had any trouble taking out the rest of my sentinels with your Stormwall. Also, if I hadn't killed Arlen, you could have repaired, you know, your systems on the Stormwall to get them back into mostly functioning form.
Right.
So, I mean, I think you're in a better position than you think. Now, the Phoenix was safe for a round, at least, I think. Right. But, and I'm not sure, I guess the Phoenix likely would have been able to finish off the Stormwall next turn.
Mm.
But after that, I mean, it's a bunch of gun mages and a grenadier and two trenchers against my Phoenix and some Stormfalls. It's pretty even, honestly.
Yeah.
So it could have gone either way. So it's supposed to show, you know, don't be stupid and you might win attrition.
Okay. So let's move on to rating the game. We'll start with me because I won. So, Aaron, how do you feel about Sloane's feat in this game?
I think he used it at the right time when everything was in range.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, I think Sloane actually has one of those extremely easy to use feats. In that, like, basically, if the stuff you want to kill is in range, you pop your feet and then you kill it.
Yes. Yeah, it's
there's never usually a lot of debate. But I mean, that doesn't mean that Mark doesn't get marks for actually using it correctly.
Well, that's what I mean, is that it was the point in the game to use it. Having seen Absolutely. The entirety of the game, that was the point to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. When you have the most bodies, you know, on the other side of your guns.
Yes.
So how many guys did you... I'm trying to look up how many guys you actually killed on that turn.
Not as many as I should have. Let me think. Officer, Sentinel Officer, 3, 4, 5 Sentinels. It's the Officer and 5 Sentinels. Iris, and that might have been it. Oh, the Fae Knight. So
yeah,
his Dragoon, 5 Sentinels, the Officer, and Iris. Not a bad haul.
Which is, yeah, not too bad. I'd say better than average.
Yeah.
Given the amount of units that Nick had at 100% strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think killing that many Sentinels, it would have been, obviously it would have been better if you'd killed more, but you killed enough that even the incredible amount of damage that the Remainer did to your Stormwall, if you had killed one less, it potentially that could have been enough to kill the Stormwall.
Yep.
So it was almost like, just not that you had the foresight to say I'm going to kill this amount, but you killed like just enough for that guy to for your Colossal to survive.
Yeah. No, that was luck. Well, a little bit of luck, a bit of bad luck too, as I mentioned. The Arcane Tempest gun mages couldn't kill a Sentinel with both hands and a map. That saying doesn't quite work. Anyways, but yeah. All right, Nick, you're on the receiving end. What do you feel?
It was a solid... I would give it a 4, I think. It's just a solid use. Nothing too crazy. I mean, the part of it is that your list wasn't really built for a feat that much.
Mm.
You had a Marshall Jack and you had a Stormwall. So, I mean, really, we've discussed this before, that really Kara doesn't want Stormwall. She wants two heavies because
right.
then she gets extra feat shots. And, I mean, whatever, it's fine. But I think, you know, it could have been better with better list construction. But, I mean, you did the right time and you killed as much as you could with all your stuff. So, you know, no worries.
Cool. All right. Nick, how did you feel about my tactics?
They're pretty solid, I guess. I mean, the Grenadiers and the Trenchers is a nice little signature trick that's pretty cool.
Mm.
The Gun Mages are kind of just hanging out on their own, doing their thing. I noticed that you matched them up against the Stormfalls, which maybe was a bad idea. Was there a particular reason why you put them across, or you just were blind?
No. So the reasoning behind it was that the Grenadier and the Trencher Master Gunners are a very good match to your Stormfalls, but because it's a Marshall Jack, the ATGM had to be within 9 inches of it, basically, and that was it. So I was hoping that by having the Grenadier and the Trenchers in front, you would fire at them and ignore my squishy Arcane Tempest, which to an extent you did. You fired at the stuff that was immune to blast damage and didn't fire at the stuff that would have died to a stiff breeze. Now, unfortunately, I don't know if that'll work ever again, but this time it worked okay.
Yeah, I fired... Now, that first turn when I fired one blast damage shot before because I forgot they were dug in, and then I fired... And then I lit them on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what I shot them two shots at.
The first shot missed. The second shot was a snipe shot, which hits, and then you were like, oh, it doesn't do any damage. Then the two guys who moved up both fired starfires, and the first one missed, and the second one hit.
Okay. That wasn't the way I remembered it, but okay.
I think that's how it was. It was okay. Something comparable to that.
Close enough.
Close enough for Jazz.
What's the range on the Mage Hunters anyway? Is it 12?
They're base 10, and they can snipe for 14.
Are you talking about gun mages?
Yeah, the gun mages.
Yeah,
gun mages. Yes.
Whereas the
the Stormfall archers.
Those guys are 12, and they can snipe to 16.
Oh, okay. So the ATGM were in range. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So tactically speaking, this isn't exactly what Nick said, but it's comparable. I tend to forget that there's a scenario, and this was a perfect example of it. The Arcane Tempest gun mages and the Grenadier. There was no reason for them to be over there. I really should have abandoned that flank entirely and just focused all my guns on the right zone. If I had done so, I'd have the Grenadier to kill Iris. The Arcane Tempest gun mages can, you know, polish the job off if needed. But more importantly, because I get to score first, if I can wipe out that side of his army and destroy the objective, I can get 3 points before Nick has a chance to respond. And even if he destroys his objective and scores 3 points for dominating it on his next turn, all I have to do is clear it out. And the only thing worth, you know, that was hardy enough to actually hold the zone down for any length of time is a Phoenix. And his Phoenix against my Stormwall, is going to come out on top. So what I should have done is put all my army onto that one flank after I saw Nick's deployment and just focused on scoring control points rather than what I did, which was, you know, try to attrition him out in a kind of a long gun line, which worked out okay, but more by luck than by, luck and bad tactics on Nick's part. Than by design. So I don't think tactically I was probably better than like a 2 or a 3. Aaron, what do you think?
I think a 3, and it has less to do with your placement of your troops and more to do with how far Nick went up the board. Because on his second turn, he basically moved all your guys within range to do like a fairly decent feat, like we talked about.
Yep.
I would say 3 as well, just because you kind of worked with what you were given, and you were given quite a bit. You didn't do anything unbelievably spectacular, I don't think, in terms of unit placement or target selection or anything like that. I do agree that the big flaw with this scenario is that the better option is what you just said, to pick a flank and stick to it.
Yeah.
Because if you can take out the objective as soon as you're able to, that's a point. If you can dominate on that same turn and then basically just block your guys, jam up the center with your guys to block your opponent from contesting that zone,
yeah,
then that's another 2 points. Yeah. And then that's the game.
Especially with Signar and the Arcane Tempest gun mages, because even if I can't kill his models, I can just thunderbolt them out of the zone. I can just push them out. So I had this incredible scenario tool, and I just ignored it. And it really, at 35 points, it's going to be very difficult for Nick to both control one zone and contest the other. At 50 points, yeah, you can put one unit in both sides, and you'll be okay. But for an army this size, it was very sloppy of me not to focus on that. Okay, we'll stick with a 3. Huh. Speaking of scenario, I think scenario, I probably score a 1. And not only was I unconscious of the scenario, I didn't lose by it. But as we just discussed, I had this great opportunity to score scenario points, and I just ignored it in lieu of, you know, trying to match up my guns to Nick's guns, which was very sloppy and silly of me. And especially for when you're practicing for a steamroller tournament, you know, scenario points, control points are incredibly important because they're tiebreakers. And a lot of the time it'll come down to, you know, dice down, you need control points for tiebreaking. If you've both got the same number of wins, you need control points. Like, any time you have to jump on a control point, you should be getting it. Even to the point where if you don't win the game but can get control points, it's a lot of not that you lose, but if you, you know, don't win the game that turn but can get a control point or two, it's a better move than it is to try to get the assassination off earlier. So that was sloppy of me. Nick, what do you think?
I don't know. I think you've been way too hard on yourself. I mean, you didn't really bring a list that was very good in scenario, in my opinion. I mean, you had a bunch of gun mages and a Stormwall. Stormwall can hold a zone, but nothing else can. So I don't think that you made a big mistake by not going for scenario. I think that shooting my caster was a very good decision. So, I mean, I think it's a three here because it you didn't do anything wrong with scenario, but we both kind of disregarded it. Mm-hmm. We just kind of fought our battle and didn't really try to get much scenario stuff done. Basically, I mean, personally, I'll talk about myself later, but like, really, like, if you don't think you can clear the zone, there's not much point in attempting to go for the scenario. And there wasn't really a point in the game when you could have easily cleared a zone and taken a point.
All right, Aaron, what do you think?
I agree that you're being a bit hard on yourself. The game only went for 2 turns.
You guys are so sweet.
I know, it's so gross.
3 turns.
No, it went for 2 turns after scoring started.
Ah, yes.
So it's not like there was a lot of build up and then scoring started and then the game continued for, you know, 3 rounds after that.
Mm.
By the time scoring was an option, the assassination win was kind of presenting itself more and more clearly.
Yeah.
So I think you're being a bit hard on yourself saying that you just weren't aware that there was a scenario. It's just that maybe Nick's presentation of his caster to you.
Yes.
Was
presenting
just
the plumage.
It's a beautiful plumage. Norwegian blue. It was just a better option. In terms of table setup, I mean, it was really sparse in the terrain department.
We were going for more of a tournament setup, and Mark took it a little too far.
Not
too far, actually, just not quite tournament style, because tournaments, usually they have, like, a forest and a hill and, like, a couple linear obstacles, but we just had, like, a couple linear obstacles, and that's it.
We had a building, a hill, a lake, and 4 linear obstacles. So I think if you want to be strict, and considering what I've seen of what the tournament organizer set up when I played him, by the way, anyone who's curious, that battle report is on Combosmite. It's under the Not Podcast Reports 002, Me Against Gingerstein. Anyways, seeing how he set up the table, what I set up is actually a little bit heavy for terrain. We probably won't see this much. So, just as a heads up.
Well, it's not that it was poorly set up. I'm just saying that the attrition game was probably a very unlikely thing.
Yeah.
Because as soon as Nick made it past the wall on his side, it was completely open. And once you made it past the, I guess we'll call them hedgerows on your side, Mark.
Yep.
Again, same thing. It was very open.
Yep.
The one thing I actually thought was going to come into play, and it didn't, was that if you go into Combosmite and you're looking at the pictures now, on Mark's side, on his right flank, there's a set of hedgerows that actually are in the zone, mm-hmm. with a little bit of the zone on the opposite side. So conceivably, you could sit a caster on the other side and have some decent concealment.
Yeah.
Whereas Nick didn't have that benefit on his side. The zone was completely free of any cover.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought might come into play, but it didn't. I just
that was the plan.
I noticed off the bat.
Yeah, that was the plan, but it ended before it got to that point.
Yeah, I was happy enough to have a good piece of cover that was inside the kill box.
Mm-hmm.
And also it being cover is, you know, as opposed to concealment, because your gunmates would ignore that.
Right. Yeah, that was, for the record, by design. I figured giving one side the advantage of concealment inside the zone was counterpointed by having cover just outside the zone. So. But I'm not a TO, so I don't know what the tournament will look like. I suspect it will be more sparse than we're used to. Okay, so Aaron, does my scenario awareness bring me up to a 2, or do you think it should stick with Nick's 3?
I think it's just a 3.
All right.
It's a sort of like the scenario was more or less the field that you were playing on, not something that you were actively going for, which I don't think constitutes ignoring it.
Fair enough. Okay, luck. Now, on my feet turn, bearing in mind that I'm rolling 3d6 for all my shots, I didn't get a single critical brutal. I failed to kill 4 sentinels, or a sentinel 4 times, with my Arcane Tempest gun mages, and I had some extremely unlucky shots with the Grenadier. But that stated, I also had some really impressive spikes. So killing Iris with a single shot from the gun mage, that was very lucky. Killing the sentinel officer, I didn't boost for damage, so that was a little bit lucky. I was lucky that Nick was incapable of destroying my Stormwall with five Sentinels. They could do it. They didn't need a lot of spiking for that damage. And, you know, overall, oh, and the fire going out, that was luck. So I think overall it was a relatively average game. If my luck had been a little bit better, it would have been much more in my favor. But as it was solid enough that nothing horrible happened.
Yeah, I think it was more in your favor than it was out of your favor. Mm. But I think it's only like 3.5 type thing. So I'm not sure if it rounds to 4 or not.
What do you think, Aaron? 3 or 4?
Yeah, 3.
3 it is.
Because it would have been a 2 because of the bad stuff, but then because of the crazy damage, it brought it back up to a 3.
Right. All right, time use. So this is one of the first games on 7-minute time turns that I didn't run out of time. I came close. I came very close on that final turn when I killed Ron. I was in within the last 45 seconds or so, but I didn't run out of time. And since this is the first time I've run this list, as Nick pointed out, that's probably an indication that I don't have enough models, because you should run out of time the first time you run a new list for time turns, unless you're very experienced with it. But that being stated, you know, I didn't run out of time. I didn't make a lot of time-constrained mistakes. I made a couple. My placement with covering fire was suboptimal. Some of my target choices weren't the best, but overall, I think my time use was probably a 4. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, 4. Sold 4. You know, you didn't run out of time, so, I mean, that's... You did a good job. I mean, you didn't really make any major mistakes due to time constraints. Maybe that last Gunmage CRA was a little bit of a thing, but, I mean...
That was dumb.
It didn't affect anything, because Ron ate some dirt, so...
Aaron, anything to add?
I don't think I can really say, because I wasn't watching the game, but, I mean, yeah, if you didn't run out of time, that's at least a 4.
Excellent. Okay, and last, Nick, derptitude. So, what are the derps that I did that you noticed?
I don't know. You tell me. I can't really think of anything.
You're painting, aren't you?
Nope.
Oh. I don't know if I really made any major derps. There was one small one, which was moving Arlen into a position where he could be shot. And the reason I did that was to try to spray some of the Sentinels, and I hit one and I killed one, I think. But again, you moved Ron up to kill Arlen, so that wasn't a bad maneuver. It was bait, and it worked. No, no, I'm joking. That was a mistake, and Arlen really should have been somewhere safe so he could keep the Stormwall operational if you had crippled something. Other than that, you know, Sloan's list design in this case is a little bit suboptimal, but I don't know if that's a derp. I don't think there was really anything very major that I did. Aaron, can you think of anything?
No, it was... I think the game was fairly simply played.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of trickery. There wasn't a lot of need for things like, you know, Pathfinder or attacks that ignored cover concealment.
Mm-hmm.
Anything like that, just because of the terrain. So, yeah, I think in terms of derptitude, like a 1, maybe, because... Yeah, really nothing happened.
What do you think, Nick? Is a 1 okay?
Yeah, I'll go for the 1.
Okay. So, now moving on to rating Nick's performance. We'll start with his feat use.
Oh, man. you know what? In this game, I didn't have much to do with it. You know what I mean? Like, the turn that I popped it, you know, the only thing that happened with it was 2 Magisters took 4 bolt shots. And Ron did a chain blast to kill Ireland for a very bad reason.
Yes.
So, like, I don't think it gets much lower than this. Other than forgetting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is almost worse than forgetting to do it. At least if you forgot to do it, at least you have the excuse that you never had a reason to, so you just didn't do it. Me, I just did it without a reason. So that's almost worse than not doing it. So I got to say, it's a bad 1. It's a low 1.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why you popped your feet when you did. It probably would have been much more useful to keep in reserve for an assassination run if it came down to it, or to kill, you know, a couple models you had to kill to get a scenario point or something like that. The turn you popped it, really you did so just kind of because you could. And
pretty much.
That's not really a good reason.
Yeah, no, it was a waste. I didn't really do anything with it. It would have been a lot more helpful, maybe a turn later when your gun mages are up in range and I can fire off a chain blast and kill half of them.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That would have been a very good use of the feat. And on top of that, your feat use kind of cost you the game, because you pop the feat, yeah, and then you're like, got to kill Arlen, so you moved up cast any
basically
of the
I feed it, and I was like, oh, I feed it, and I have these three focus, and I should spend it, because I just feed it. And so I moved up into a chain blast just because, and I died. So it was pretty horrible.
Yeah.
Can we give negatives?
What do you think, Aaron?
No, let's not give a negative.
Instead of one to five, give it an F.
We make a new scale from negative 5 to 5, and no.
Ron's feat is the boosted dice on magic rolls.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, magic attack and damage
and range, right?
Also +2 range.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
It's a pretty awesome feat for magic dice.
It's a great feat, but it's like I have this ability. Why not use it?
Yeah.
You kind of moved up and use it. Although, kind of in Nick's defense, I think he's being a bit hard on himself as well because his forces were dwindling quite a bit.
Yes.
And when you're in that position, when you're playing a game and you do have a spell or an attack or a feat, in this case, that is powerful, it's kind of like, well, I got to use this.
Right.
And you're sort of stuck into that mindset where, like, it's powerful, so I'm going to use it.
Yep.
Even though the conditions for it being powerful aren't met in that way. I think this fits that condition as well.
Yeah. So do you think a 2?
Well, no, we'll stay at a 1. Let's not be crazy. I'm just saying that...
It's still shit. It's just not negative shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's still something. It's not 0.
Got it. All right. Tactics. You know, tactically speaking, Nick, I don't think you did an awful job. You had some really interesting ideas and some really potent threats that you brought up. You did okay. And that being stated, you also made some kind of significant blunders, which we're going to tie into Jerptitude at some point. But like the Fane Knight running up to Sloan, if he had gotten in range, man, that would have been game-changing. But he didn't. And he could have if you had TK'd him. And, you know, you didn't fire with your Sentinel on the second turn to try to hit my Stormwall, even though you could get him in range and yada, 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 yada. I think a lot of this stuff boils down to that TK Warcasters are kind of in a realm of their own. You have to really be thinking all the time, okay, how can I use TK to my advantage this turn? So the one turn where you used it to move your Sentinels to get charge lanes, that was great. You know, that was something I didn't expect, and you managed to circumvent my covering fire completely. It didn't stop a single one of your Sentinels from getting into base-to-base with the Stormwall, which was a bit of a surprise. But, that being stated, I think that one moment of brilliance probably counteracts the few moments of sub-brilliance, and in the balance, it's probably around a 3.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. TK is such a powerful ability. Sometimes I wish Ron had Scaverse's feet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because then you'd be just be like a whole round of, because then like Ron's feet would basically just be 8 TKs. That'd be enough. it'd be so good. Like 8 TKs, maybe a 2, like maybe 6 TKs and a 2-cost 4 chain blast. That'd be pretty sweet too. But,
yes.
Anyway, no, it's pretty sweet. Sorry, we're not talking about the feet. We're talking about my tactics. No, yes. Not very sweet. TK super powerful, and I love that the flexibility it gives. It's a hit buff. You know, it's a movement buff.
Incredibly powerful scenario tool.
Yeah, it's just great. It's awesome. Other than that, I think what you said was pretty valid. Like, I did some good stuff. You know, TKing Sentinels around your covering fire templates. The whole Fane Knight thing was just kind of a blunder, I guess. I mean, here's the thing, though. It took both of Sloan's initial shots,
yep,
to kill that Fane Knight. So that's 2 shots that would have gone out to killing the Phoenix or some Sentinels or Iris or something else.
Yep.
And so I'm not 100% sure it wasn't a good use of 5 points just to run him down her throat. Now, it would have been way better if he had engaged her, because then she would have had a really tough decision to make.
Yeah.
But as it was, I still don't think it was necessarily a complete waste. I mean, it's 5 points is a lot to throw away that way. So if he was, say, like a 3 or 4 point solo, it would be more justifiable.
Right.
Yeah. As it was, you know, I definitely didn't get what I could have from him. That's for sure.
Just as a counterpoint, the Signar equivalent of what you did is the Minuteman. Because the Minuteman can run 12 inches or can walk 6, leap 5, or... you know, charge 9, leap 5. So a lot of people will do it. Basically, we do it with your Fae Knight with a Minuteman. You load up with focus, send it off to its death, and hope that while it dies, it messes up your opponent's plans enough that it causes them to make a critical mistake. The only difference is, of course, that it costs focus to do it, and you have to be a little bit more careful with the Minuteman than you do with the Fey Knight. But the concept is the same. So I agree with you that that can be a valid tactical deployment. Aaron does kind of the same thing when he takes... What's the name of that Berserker?
Fenris.
When he takes Fenris. It's the same concept. Like, even if Fenris doesn't end up doing a lick of actual work, having him on the table is such a terrifying presence that a lot of people will disproportionately put firepower into him to make sure he doesn't get where he's going.
He will soak up a lot of bullets that could have been used to kill more important things.
Yeah.
And if they don't use the bullets to kill important things, he'll kill stuff too. So, I mean...
Exactly. Aaron, anything you want to add?
No, you pretty much said everything I was thinking. That it is kind of it seems like a huge waste for 5 points to just basically have soaked up 2 shots. But it is a valid point that it was a threat. You had to think about it, and it was 2 shots. It could have gone into other things that actually did things on that turn or the next turn.
Yeah.
Like if you'd had both those shots to shoot my Phoenix, you have a very good chance of scrapping that Phoenix that turn with 3 shots from Sloan and 2 shots from the Stormwall, 3 shots from Stormwall.
Yeah.
You have a good chance of wrecking that Phoenix
with
range attacks. So, I mean, I can't say that I did the wrong thing.
I accept your statement. The only thing you did wrong in that context is not TKing the Fey Knight first.
Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So, Aaron, how do you feel about Nick's scenario performance?
He is kind of in the same...
I did get Ron into that zone. That's pretty important.
Yeah, so in that sense, he's one up on you, Mark.
Yes, he is.
I was going to say that both of you, I think, were just kind of looking down the barrel at each other, so to speak. Just that's what you were focusing on, each model, not so much the scenario. But I do think that it showed more that Nick was thinking about scenario more than you were, just because of his placement of units.
Mm.
Whether that's the case or not, but that's just, if you look at the progression of in the pictures, that's the way that it kind of looks.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think, Nick, you were more conscious of the scenario. Even if you didn't do much with it, you were certainly more conscious of it than I was. I think I was going to say it probably lands you a 4.
Okay, I think that's kind of high. I was aware of it. I wasn't disregarding it, I also wasn't trying to score points. But I did ensure that I had models in place to contest. But that's about the extent of my scenario awareness. So I think that's really only worth a 3.
Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say 3 as well.
Okay.
There were points where both you and Nick could have attacked objectives, at least to just get a point.
Right.
Which, you know, if you take out an objective on that turn, you get a point, then your opponent has to start thinking about, well, maybe he has tricks up his sleeve that he's going to get a scenario. So now that you have to start thinking about the scenario, and it completely changes your tactics and the way that you're going forward in the game.
Right.
If either of you had, you know, attacked objectives, and I think it would have bumped the scenario awareness up 1 point. But since that's not the case, yeah, 3.
Okay. All right, Nick, how'd you feel about your luck?
It was pretty average. The Sentinels, I mean, the first half spiked low, the second half spiked high, so it kind of evened out a little bit. Because, I mean, and that's just the way that Weapon Masters work. Usually your high spikes more than make up for your shitty spikes.
Right.
Usually, that's just the way it works. So that was okay. I mean, they almost wrecked Stormwall in a turn, which is... Yeah. You know, can't complain about
5 of them. That's just 5. Gods. Ridiculous.
But other than that, yeah, like, not much going on.
I can't think of any cases where you were particularly lucky.
I mean, like, you know, you actually missed some attack rolls, which is very unusual for a Signar player.
Yeah. Yeah, especially on Sloane's feet turn. I mean, 3d6 with rats of 7 to 10, you know.
Well, nothing missed in your feet turn, did they?
Yeah, no, the Arcane Tempest Gun Mage has missed your Sentinels a couple times.
No way.
Yeah, way.
On a hill? Needing 7s with 3 dice?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I rolled like 3s and 4s, at least 2 or 3 of them. And then
you filled the wound some, but that's expected.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I managed to miss. It was very depressed. Even the Grenadier missed. And
Mat 8.
Yeah, he was Mat 8. He was Rat 8, and you know, anyways, whatever. It should have been hitting. Didn't. Okay. So, what about your time use?
Time use was suboptimal. I would give it a 2, just because, you know, it was generally okay. Just that second turn where I just had time, and maybe not even to get Ron into the kill box. it was pretty close.
Like, okay, hypothetical question. You don't activate Ron in time. Time runs out. Do you spend your 5 minute extension just to get Ron out of kill box?
Nah. I don't think this was going to scenario either way.
Mm. See, if you hadn't and I had gotten the 2 victory points, I for sure would have gone for the scenario.
Mm.
But because you can get 3 points in a turn in this scenario, so that could win me the game on the spot.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So,
anyways, yeah, I don't have anything to add about your time use. I think it was a solid 2. Aaron?
Except for that turn, were there any time other turns that you ran out of time?
No, nope. he was under the wire for all of them.
Even my extension, the turn that I used my extension, I had like 3 minutes left when I finished.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll stick with the 2. It's fine. It seems a little low because you only ran out once, but yeah, 2.
Okay, and last but not least, the derptitude. Nick, would you like to go
first?
Oh,
the derp. The sweet, sweet, lovely derp.
So you only had 1 derp.
Well, maybe 2. Like maybe 1, 2. One and a half. I mean, the Fae Knight was a little bit of a derp, but like it wasn't really like a big deal. Like, it's just that it would have been better if this had happened.
Yes.
That's all. And again, I don't know how easy it would have been for me to get in TK range of him anyway. I probably would have had to TK the Phoenix first, and then I might have been in range to TK the Fae Knight. So, I mean, it would have been a little more tricky than just saying TK, right?
Right.
But moving up Ron on that feet turn and doing that stuff was just silliness. I'm just obviously bad at this game.
Don't say that. Like,
no, just, you know, there's just a certain thing that in War Machine, the most important thing in the game is protecting your caster. You know what I mean? Either you have a caster who's beefy and can take it, or you have a caster who's way back there where you can't attack him. And I did neither of the above. So
basically, you're either playing the Butcher or you're playing anyone else.
Oh, there's lots of casters that can take it.
I haven't encountered them yet. Oh, Terminus. Terminus, I suppose, counts as well. Okay, so Aaron, my question to you, does Nick's 1 massive derp earn him a 3, a 4, or 2?
I'm torn as to whether it's an actual derp or just poor tactics.
I think moving your Warcaster out into the wide open in front of your entire army next to an assassination ranged caster probably is derp, not tactical.
Yeah, that's not something that you do as a calculated risk.
Yeah,
that's something you do because you didn't think about it.
Okay, well, here's the reason I'm thinking it.
Go for it.
Because it's so okay, this is a chasm thing to do, like, it's just to do it, and it's like, why? Well, I just wanted to.
Yeah,
Nick doesn't do that.
No,
that's why I'm thinking it was like tactical. Poor tactics, but yeah.
If I had a reason to be in the zone, like say if I wanted to try to dominate or something like that, then that would have been tactics, and so it would have been my fault for being too aggressive on scenario and then dying because of it. But in this case, I didn't actually have a good reason. I mean, I went up to just a fort to kill a solo, and I didn't really consider the consequences of doing that, and that's why, in my feeling, it falls into the derp category, because I wasn't thinking with ramifications, and I just kind of left myself hanging in the wind.
Okay, well, the reason I was saying it would be tactical is because you moved him for the sole reason to kill Arlen. Right. There was a point to it. It was a bad move.
Yes.
But it's you moved the caster and then we're like, oh, shit. Oh, fuck, I shouldn't have done that.
There's certainly an argument to be made for both ways.
But if we're going to... I mean, since we're in the derptitude section of the podcast, it's probably a 5. It lost you the game.
That's true.
That's really bad.
Yeah, I'm going to give them. I'm going to suggest a 4 because there are probably bigger derps. You did kill something. I mean, you could have moved up and then missed. That would have been awesome.
You know what? I can't wait for the day when we do finally see a derp 5 game. But
that's
I don't.
Be awesome.
I don't think this was it. But I mean, that day, you know, it's coming. It's only around the corner. Especially with our gaming group, we're awful. Well, yeah. I'm off.
Okay, well, that was the battle report. Thanks for listening, and I just want to mention that Nick and I did play a second game immediately after this. The first game didn't take very long, about an hour, hour and a half. So we sat up and we played a second one. I played Siege, and Nick decided to try his Ron list again, see if he could, you know, make up for some of the egregious errors of this game.
Yeah, spoiler, it didn't work.
You can read all about it on the Combo Smite website or on the Privateer Press Forum's Battle Reports threads. I'm going to post it there as well. I also have to say that Nick took some really good pictures, so we are blessed that the situation worked out, that the lighting was okay. And there's a great money shot, as I like to call them, of the two Warcasters standing in front of a piece of scenery with like the storm wall looming in the background. It's pretty cool. Okay, I think that's it for the battle report for this week. Why don't we start with you, Aaron? What do you got on the painting table these days?
I haven't touched anything in about a week. Week and a half. Currently sitting at 5 pikemen left, and still those 5 steelhead riflemen from before Christmas, just sitting there.
I saw the Japanese hut you put together. We used it in the battle report.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It's pretty. You did a good job with the assembly.
It's a nice kit. I'm not sure where Adam got them. He got them online someplace.
The company is Foreground Miniatures.
Free stuff.
And they make a whole wide range of really nice laser-cut MDF buildings that you can just kind of slot together. I kind of like them. They just kind of they don't necessarily look good next to more realistic-looking terrain, though, because they look very flat because they're laser-cut flat wood, right? But these Japanese ones in particular look much cooler because they have this thatch roof that really kind of makes them fit in more with our very detailed terrain.
Yeah, no, I agree. So good job on that, Aaron.
Thank you.
Right, Nick, what about you? What do you got on?
Painting table. Well, true to my word, I've been working on my Invictors, been plugging away. I have 1.5 more Invictors to finish before I am done that godforsaken white armor unit.
Hooray!
and then you can move on to the next godforsaken white armor unit.
Yeah, basically. And I haven't decided what I'm going to paint next. I'm probably going to paint some mercenary stuff because I have maybe 3 or 4 different mercenary models that I need to paint before I'm allowed to play them because I've made a pledge to play my dwarfs painted only.
Units?
I have the Basher Heavy Warjack. I have Ion and Holt, and I bought Dougal McNally as well.
Nice. So as a threat, Nicholas, if you don't do well at the tournament, I'm going to buy you a second unit of Invictors, and then you'll have to paint those.
You're a bastard.
In my case, I have basically the same stuff I had last week. I'm putting it all aside, so my Manoth is being tabled temporarily, and tomorrow night I'm going to spend 2 hours doing nothing but painting front arcs and basing, because the lists I'm bringing to the tournament, 95% of them are based and arced, but I got to finish that other 5%. So all my Silverline, my Stormlances, and a Trencher, blah, 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 blah. So that's what I'm going to be doing. It's going to be tedious and boring, but, you know, I'm just going to motor through it and hopefully get it all finished in one shot. So that finishes the podcast. Wow, we did this in record time.
Mm-hmm.
Go us.
So thank you for listening to Combo Smite. And remember, if Signar didn't look this good, all the other factions wouldn't look that bad.